This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row 1, Seat 1 podcast. This is Ben, a.k.a. Boston Nuga. I went to a great show on Friday night up in Sellersburg, Indiana, and called the Paradigm Pro Wrestling Heavy Hitters Tournament. And man, it was like the all-star game of independent wrestling. It was a blast. They brought in the UWFI rules and hardcore rules, and they mixed them. And they had some of the best guys in independent wrestling on the show. And it was just, man, it was as fun as you can have as a professional wrestling show. I had so much fun, in fact, that I had to bring on Gary Wilson, the promoter of Paradigm Wrestling, Paradigm Pro Wrestling, onto the show to just talk about that show and the history of Paradigm Pro Wrestling and his evolution as a wrestling fan. And just talk to him a little bit, because Gary's an interesting dude. And Paradigm's a hell of a promotion. And I'm just real excited to have him on the show. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Man, tell me about your journey as a wrestling fan, because if you're running UWFI tournaments, man, I bet your education's a little different than mine.
Sure. Like, the earliest wrestling stuff I can remember is honestly the WWF.
Where'd you grow up?
Like, 91, Hogan, Taker beating Hogan is probably my earliest wrestling memory.
Oh, sure, yeah. Where'd you grow up?
Oh, I'm sorry, where did I grow up? South Bend, Indiana.
Oh, cool.
Which is, about an hour and a half outside of Chicago. It's probably 5 hours from Sellersburg, where we run shows at.
Home of Notre Dame.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I grew up with that stuff. But my dad also had one of those de-scrambler boxes.
Oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky.
And I can talk about this now, because I'm sure the piracy charges are outside of the statute of limitations at this point. But we had, you know, access to all the pay-per-views. So I used to watch what they called the Barker Channel, which was, you know, the different ads that they would give you for these upcoming things. And that's how I discovered a lot of different promotions. Like, you know, AAA out of Mexico ran a pay-per-view in the 90s that I remember watching. I really, really remember the UWFI stuff, though. Hacksaw Jim Duggan was in one of the commercials. But, like, the main gist of it was promoted that it was real. You know, it's real, it's real was their tagline. And obviously it wasn't. It was a work. But at the time watching it, it looked so much different than other pro wrestling. It was presented so much differently. This is before the age of MMA. You didn't know that it wasn't real. You know, as I'm sitting there watching it, you know, I'm young. I'm probably under 10 at this point. I thought it was real.
And this is right? late 80s, and, early 90s. This is early 90s, right?
Yeah, this is early 90s. I want to say like 94-ish was when they were on American pay-per-view. And that was my first exposure to kind of that style. You know, I've always loved wrestling. Wrestling, I will say, is my first love. But I've always been a huge, huge MMA fan, I think, which is apparent when you watch some of our things dating back to UFC 1. You know, I can remember watching UFC 1 with my dad and my mom. So, like, I've always loved the No Hold Barred era, especially the early stuff when it was a little bit raw or less
the tournaments and stuff, when they're throwing big guys against little guys and the Gracies, and oh man, that was the stuff, man.
Yeah, I loved that. I love modern MMA too, but I'd say MMA has had just as big an influence, if not bigger, than some of the traditional stuff on the style of events I promote. And one thing I just want to clarify real quick before anybody gets mad at me. I am a co-promoter of Paradigm. There are five of us, so I don't want anybody to feel left out. I love you, Cam. I love you, Doug. I love you, Duncan. I love you, Jordan. I love you, Logan. I love everybody. So I just wanted to clarify that point.
We'll talk about that. That's a lot of cooks, man.
Oh, yeah, it is. It certainly is. But I think it gives us some variety. The UWFI stuff is my brainchild, which is why I wanted to talk to you. Like, Heavy Hitters as well is my brainchild, kind of the The show had a very odd format, which I'm sure we can talk about a little bit.
Oh, yeah, we'll get there. Let's talk about you, though, kind of growing up, too. Like, so you had the Scrambler box. You're watching UWFI. At what point do you decide to get into the crazy world of pro wrestling?
You know, I had a few stops and starts. I helped out a little bit with a couple of promotions down in the Evansville area when I was in college. This would have been like 2007 to 2009-ish. They're both since defunct, but I learned a little bit about the business there, and got into indie shows, you know. I kind of grew up on indie wrestling. I didn't get to go see a ton of it, but, like, I would buy the Ring of Honor DVDs, you know, Full Impact Pro. I was watching all of that stuff in high school. I was kind of nerdy with my wrestling love because I never loved the mainstream. After WCW died, I didn't watch a whole lot of mainstream wrestling. So that's kind of, the independent scene was kind of what kept me connected to wrestling.
Same story, dude. Same story, definitely. Yeah, Ring of Honor is what got me back in. When WCW died, a part of me died too.
Yeah, exactly. No, I 96 to 97 WCW is probably my favorite era for any promotion ever.
Oh, yeah.
Just the variety. And at Paradigm, I think we have some of that variety because we do have a lot of cooks and we all like different things. But to go back to, like, what got me into it, I actually I went to law school up in Cleveland, Ohio, and that's where AIW, Absolute Intense Wrestling, is based out of. They kind of reignited kind of some of my passion for it. And I actually started training. I had a really ill-advised bout where I decided I was going to try and wrestle myself. So I actually started training with Matt Justice for a while.
That sounds crazy. That's
how I met him. Oh, yeah. He was... how do I say this diplomatically? More normal than, a little bit less insane. Yeah, he's a great guy, though. But I kind of got into it down there, you know, and then it kind of went away. I had post-concussion syndrome for a while I was in law school, which was difficult, you know, with dealing with academic work. So wrestling didn't really work out for me, but promoting seems to have been a much better fit.
So at what point does the concept for Paradigm come in? Were all you guys friends going in, or how does that whole, how do the five of you get together, or the six, or is it five or six?
There's like six of us.
How do the six of you guys get together and make this baby?
We came in at different times. So essentially, we all went to Ian Rotten shows, IWA, together. And we were friends with this guy named Brian Vinson, who hosts another podcast called The Back Row Hecklers. And at the time, this other promotion was trying to restart locally, and they wanted somebody to book and run it, and Brian got the call to do that. And it kind of grew from there. That aspect of it didn't really work out, but we still wanted to keep doing it, Brian included. So we moved forward with it. And, you know, we started as Prodigy Pro Wrestling in, I want to say, October of 2017. And it kind of grew from there. I became more heavily involved starting with the second show. And that's where it kind of came from, was that core concept. We did ultimately, and I'm not going to get into any drama, I think a lot of people in the area know that, we had a little bit of a falling out with Brian. We're all friends now. But it was kind of dramatic at the time. He was right about some stuff. We were right about some stuff. But we decided to kind of make it our own. And that's how we became Paradigm Pro Wrestling. We changed our name in May of 2018. And it's kind of been our core unit going forward since then, promoting shows and each adding a little bit of a different element to the promotion.
Talk about how difficult it is to run in Southern Indiana, because for people uninitiated, Southern Indiana has 11 billion promotions who run, basically, because the state of Kentucky has a commission, and so everybody who would run in Kentucky runs in Southern Indiana. Everyone who runs in Indiana runs in Southern Indiana. There's a bunch of venues there. It is chock full, I guess the word would be,
sure,
of promotions, and to stick out like you guys is quite an accomplishment, because there's stalwarts like IWA Mid-South, there's a million different startups, there seems to be new promotions popping up every single day, especially, I mean, the running joke is someone, every time we drive by the arena, we always joke that someone's running there at that exact moment.
And it's generally true.
And it's generally true. but it's got to be hard to stick out in such a saturated market.
It is. It's like with anything else, we had to kind of find our unique selling proposition. And for us, kind of UWFI has turned into that, some of the different things we're doing. But, you know, it's been a struggle. We're doing pretty well now, but it wasn't always the case. And we got to talk about the elephant in the room, too, is Ohio Valley Wrestling. You know, of the largest, oldest, most historic independent wrestling things is right across the bridge. So when people in this area think indie wrestling, they think OVW. Or, you know, then there's kind of the more – OVW is a very different product. You know, it's a TV product. So then the more hardcore fans kind of look for something else, and I tend to think it's those people that come over to Indiana. And when I say hardcore, I mean more passionate, like more knowledgeable, but also fans of hardcore wrestling. This area is very well known for hardcore wrestling from IWA. So, you know, we had to stick out, and Shoot Style has kind of helped us do that.
Now, I was at the first UWFI show that you guys ran. With COVID, time is a meaningless circle.
November 2019. November 2019. Fighting Sphere Heavyweight Grand Prix.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that for me.
No problem.
That was your first UWFI style show. I had a hell of a time. But talk about your first UWFI show style, you know, running that and what you ran into. You had, again, the All-Star team was there. And talk about what you learned from that show.
Okay, so I'm going to go back just a little bit further. Yeah. So that's the first one where we formally did UWFI, but the genesis of it was actually Heavy Hitters 1.
Okay.
Which was February of that same year. We booked a 16-man strong style tournament, and it was very nearly done under UWFI rules. But to be honest, I got cold feet at the last minute thinking people wouldn't understand it or get it. But I was really happy with how Heavy Hitters went. Kind of showed that, you know, we could do a bigger, larger budget show and still succeed, because we'd had a few larger budget shows in our history, but that was one of the first big budget shows we did. I mean, I'm like, you know what, if I'm going to do this, let's just, you know, do it. So I'm sitting on Twitter late one night. I'd just gone to a Louisville Bats game, actually, and I'm just bored. It's like 2 or 3 in the morning on a Thursday.
It's when the best ideas are hatched, man.
Exactly. I tweet out a logo of the old UWFI logo, the purple one, and I'm like, hey, if we ran a UWFI rule show, would you be interested? Would you come? And at that time, that was our best performing tweet ever. And this is a tweet that sent out at like 3 in the morning, not optimized. I haven't tagged anybody. I haven't done anything other than put an image in there and some text, because I'm just like really just floating it. And it gets this great response. And I'm like, well, damn, I got to do it now. And that's what led to, you know, the Fighting Spirit Heavyweight Grand Prix, which, believe it or not, was originally going to be a smaller budget concept show that just quickly spiraled out of control in a good way, because we got so much interest from fans and as far as wrestlers that wanted to participate in it. But originally we were just going to build it around Anthony Henry and Dominic Guarini, who were both in the final product as well, but then Stefan Bonner became available, and it's like, how am I not going to book Stefan Bonner? And, you know, the show kind of grew from there.
Yeah, talk about Stefan Bonner, because here's a guy who's a UFC legend. He's a UFC Hall of Famer. He's dipping his toe in professional wrestling. How does that all work out?
Bonner is phenomenal to do business with. He's a great guy, super nice. You wouldn't know he was a celebrity. You know, if you look at the Q ratings, I think they're called, of like most recognizable, he's much more recognizable than most indie wrestlers, but just very humble, very easy to work with. I got nothing but positive things to say about Bonner. He's still a phenomenal athlete. He's in his 40s, and he's a fucking madman. You know, that show on Friday, I asked him to wrestle a hardcore match, and I'm like, you know, with Matt in there, you probably won't have to take a whole lot. You know, you take 1 or 2 door spots, you know, the fans will react well. And he's like, don't worry about it. It's no problem. Because I'm like, you ever gone through a door? He's like, don't worry about it. And I'm like, all right. And I go out there, and, you know, they just fucking killed it.
They brained each other for 15 minutes, and it was glorious. I was tweeting about it the whole time.
That was one of the most violent matches I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't expect that out of somebody, because, you know, like I said at the show, he's got nothing to prove. He's fought, legitimately fought, seven world champions, main evented in front of 60,000 people in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And I've got him in the American Legion. We're sold out, granted, but it's, we're capped at 125 people because of COVID. He doesn't have to do all this, but he wants to. You know, and I think that really speaks to just what a warrior he is.
It was so cool to see. And then that first championship Grand Prix show, what was really impressive to me was he was spending time with the fans. He was really approachable. He was chatting with people. He was sharing memories. He was he wasn't one of those people who was blowing people off. He was actually genuinely just, like, enjoying being around people and just sharing, you know, what memories people had of his career. And that's a dude who doesn't have to do that.
Exactly. He's very approachable. I always joke with him that I got to get my Mark photo with him when he comes in for us. But he's just, he's so nice. And what's crazy to me is he's been wrestling on and off since 2017, I believe. About 3 years. We were actually his first match in the state of Indiana. And he's from Indiana. He lives out in Vegas now. But we were his first match, his first singles match in Indiana. I think he might have done one battle royal, kind of his guest spot prior to that, years and years ago. But I don't understand why more indie promotions don't take advantage of him. He's just phenomenal. He's a good draw. And he can go in the ring. You know, he really can.
Yeah, he shocks me with how good he is given his experience level, because he's just a natural athlete, and it transfers to wrestling.
Agreed, 100%.
Yeah, he had a picture of him and Forrest Griffin in their fight, and Forrest had already signed it, and he signed it to my brother, and I gave it to my brother for Christmas, and my brother said it was the best Christmas present he ever got.
That's awesome, man.
'Cause my brother's an old UFC mark just like us. And my brother just marked out so hard. He just, like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and he's just, man, that fight with him and Griffin, like, man, what a fight that was.
That got all of us into UFC, man. Like, that got, I mean, I could count a dozen of my friends off, you know, off my hands right now who, that fight got us all into UFC, like, hardcore.
No, I agree. And without that fight, the UFC is not what it is today.
Completely.
Right, I've followed the UFC since UFC 1, mm-hmm. but prior to the Ultimate Fighter and that fight, it was a niche product.
Yeah.
It was a niche product for a while.
I was in my college dorm with my fraternity brothers, and we were, like, screaming at the television, just watching that, and just, like, jumping up and down like little children. It was amazing.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So, well, I mean, that was at that first championship Grand Prix show. You had, you know, Dominic Guarini, friend of the show. He's been on the show before. Another athlete who, I mean, too good for this world. he ended up winning the tournament, and he is talk about someone who's a natural talent. Especially, you know, he's only been in the business for what, about 4 or 5 years now, and he wrestles like a 20-year vet.
No, he really does. And the great thing about Dom, I love Dom, because with the UWFI stuff, you know, I'm not going to attempt to age in those matches, but we've got, you know, we were literally resurrecting a style that had not been done in the United States in 25 years. And Dominic Guarini and Eric Stevens had a degree of familiarity with it, right? Dom with his jiu-jitsu background, Eric because he's been around for a while longer than some of the other guys, and also does jiu-jitsu. And I would basically said, hey, I need you guys to run the locker room and explain to people how to do this. And they did it without question. And, you know, the result I thought was phenomenal. Like, and we can talk about this more later, but from a show standpoint, I think Heavy Hitters 2 was better than the Grand Prix. But from a UWFI authenticity standpoint, I think the Grand Prix was a bit more spot on.
I enjoyed the shit out of both of them for different reasons. I mean, just... But the first one kind of had a level of intimacy, just because it was my first time at the arena. It was in the arena. The second one was more of a spectacle.
Yes, I would agree with that. I would agree 100% with that.
It was just crazy.
It was absolutely a spectacle crazy. Is the best way to describe it.
Let's circle back a little bit. You know, we've talked about UWFI, but for people who listen to this podcast who aren't familiar with UWFI rules, give the Reader's Digest version of what UWFI rules consist of and what makes a UWFI rules match different than your traditional wrestling match.
Sure. The biggest difference off the bat is no pinfalls. Right? Matches are generally decided via knockout, which is going to be a 10 count like in boxing, a technical knockout, which is when a referee declares that a fighter cannot defend himself, or submission, which is going to be a tap out. There is also a very complicated point system. But in the actual UWFI, man, I've seen a lot of UWFI. I've seen 5-6 fights that were decided by points. It existed more to keep the bout short, explosive. It served its purpose, too, and it's a good way to enforce the fight, like within kayfabe, to enforce fouls, because you have to be able to penalize a guy without disqualifying him. But generally speaking, it did not decide many matches, at least not in my UWFI viewing experience.
Yeah, because I'd get that sheet and I'd see the whole point system, and I was honestly overwhelmed at first. I'm just like, I remember this, but I forgot how complicated the point system was. And then I'm just like, I'm just going to absorb these as shoot-style wrestling matches, and my level of enjoyment went up, and I kept the points in the back of my mind, but it didn't factor in as much as I thought it would.
Right, and that's partially by design. So it's difficult to – we'd like to tell more stories with the points, because UWFI would on occasion tell stories with points, and I don't want to pretend like they didn't. But at an indie wrestling level, doing a live scorecard is much harder than you might imagine. It's not a – it's just production limitations. So we want the points there. That's why we do UWFI points – in Japan were also was open scoring, which means when it was on screen, you could see a running tally of the points. I made the decision for the sake of a better broadcast experience, for lack of a better term, to go to a partially closed scoring. Now, closed scoring in MMA means like you don't know what the judges are saying until the end of the fight, right? When they read the scorecards. Partially closed is what we're doing, in which you don't know the score until they announce that a fighter is down to 5 points, and then they'll do live point announcements. It came up in the Matt versus Bonner 1, but often it does not. So I just got very complex on a very simple question, and I apologize.
No, it's okay. No, it's because it seemed a little daunting, but honestly, I mean, if you just kind of take these as these are going to be different but fun, and you know, just kind of let your brain absorb it. Wrestling matches, it's a blast.
No, thank you, and I appreciate that, because I think for the most part they've been well received. And I'm not gonna say my intention with advertising the UWFI rules like we do is not to be a carbon copy of the UWFI. You know, We're trying to emulate it. We're trying to incorporate that in, but we're going to give our own spin to it. And I think you see that in some of the results.
So let's talk about Friday night's show.
Sure.
You brought in the All-Star team. You brought in pretty much all the indie names I can think of, basically, especially for, you know, Indiana on a Friday night. I was shocked at some of the guys you guys had available to you on a Friday night in Indiana, especially with, you know, GCW running, Beyond running. It was a coup, frankly. You guys were able to get who you got. Let's run down this show, shall we?
Sure. And can I give you some background real quick?
Yeah, please do. Please do. Yeah.
So many guys. So the show was originally scheduled for March, like March 20th.
Gotcha.
And then obviously COVID happens. Right. And I've got to figure out. So we find out on the 16th that the state of Indiana is shutting down, and I've got to reschedule the show, which was a financial bloodbath, but that's another story. And I'm just thinking to myself, OK, well, I'm going to try and run in July. Right. July will probably be clear. Good time. So I reach out to the roster. I actually sent a Google note, because a Google form, to give them 3 dates all in the summer of like, hey, when are you guys the most available? And July 24th worked, but about 4 or 5 guys weren't available. So I booked the ones that were, and then I booked replacements for everybody else. That's where your Chris Dickinson came in, your Eric Stevens, for some of the guys that weren't going to be able to make the rescheduled date. Because again, you know, this is March. We're all operating under the mindset that this is going to end relatively soon.
Little did we know.
How wrong we were. But then as we start getting closer, it's becoming clear that Indiana is going to be one of the few places running shows. So I see a lot of shows canceling, like the Iowa Wrestling Hall of Fame weekend canceled. So I reached out to Dominic Guarini and Gary J, because they had been scheduled on the first version of the show, but then couldn't make the reschedule. And I'm like, hey, I saw your guys' date got canceled. Do you want to go ahead and come back? I'd like to honor that booking if you're interested. And they wanted to. And the same thing happened with Tom Lawler. You know, he was supposed to be going back to MMA. So I booked a replacement. Chris Dickinson was Tom Lawler's replacement. But then the Professional Fighters League canceled their season. So I reached out actually the day I found out the Professional Fighters League got canceled, which I'm sure Tom had much more important things on his mind because, you know, MMA pays a lot better than indie wrestling. Just to be like, hey, I know you just lost that great opportunity that paid a lot of money, but if you want to come to Indiana and work my indie wrestling show.
Here's a little bit of money.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we were able to work that out. The Professional Fighters League gave him a release to go back and do some indie wrestling. Until I want to say March of next year, I think is what he said, that they're signing off on him to be able to do that.
That's cool.
So we ended up with a 22-man tournament when it was originally scheduled to be 16-man.
An embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My main goal was really to... wrestlers have been hit really hard by all this COVID stuff. I wanted, if I could, to give as many people work as I could. And I wanted to try and do it as safely as possible.
Sure.
Those were really my main goals with the show.
So you bring everybody out, and it hits me immediately, like, this is the freaking All-Star game. I tweeted it out and got, you know, this is the All-Star game. And it seriously was. And to a fan, to be able to, you know, I mean, it was about a five-hour drive for me, so it's accessible, you know, to be able to drive... you know, 5 hours and see this level, this amount of talent, because you do the picture in the ring with all the wrestlers in the beginning, and to just at that moment when everybody's in the ring at one time, it's like, holy shit, you know, like all of these dudes here. Did you have that same moment?
I don't know that I was present yet. It's very stressful right now trying to run a show in the middle of a global pandemic.
Sure.
to be completely honest. So I don't think I really got to enjoy things until the show started.
Sure.
Because I was trying to make sure everybody was wearing masks. You know, we enforced the mask rule backstage. We enforced it with the crowd. We did temperature checks on everybody coming into the building.
You did a great job, by the way. I want to give you credit for that. You did a great job with the masks. You did a great job with spacing everybody. You did a great job with temperature checks. You did a great job. The only people I've seen do the Swiffering of the ring.
Yeah, and just to be, it was a Swiffer. They were the bleach Swiffers as well to try and kill germs on that. Because it's just, I tried to do, you know, I wrestled a few matches back in the day. I tried to do everything that I would need to make myself comfortable in there. Right? Because this COVID stuff scares the hell out of me. I'm not going to lie. So I knew that if I could get to a situation where I felt comfortable with it, we were probably running pretty safely.
So your first match, and this match was a banger. This just kicked it off with just, you know, absolute fireworks. Tom Lawler, who we've discussed, former UFC fighter. Some of you guys may know him from his appearances on Figure Four Daily. Some of you guys may know him from the UFC. Some of you guys may know him from all independent wrestling all across the country. Against Calvin Tankman, who was an absolute favorite of mine. Just signed with MLW. He is a just human refrigerator who can move like a ballet dancer. And they tore it down. They absolutely tore it down.
Yeah, very much so. They beat the shit out of each other, to be frank.
They really did.
that exceeded my wildest expectations. Tankman's very, very good. He's going to only get better as well. You know, UWFI, one of the top names was Vader, right? Was the top, probably the top American star. Him and Gary Albright. And Tankman has a lot of similarities to both.
It's a really good comparison, actually, Vader. That's a really good comparison.
So that's like his role. What I wanted for him is this role was to be like the Vader of the tournament. To be honest with you, he might be more athletic than Vader was. He's certainly more agile, but like he plays that role so perfectly, using his size, you know, just crushing Tom down. I thought that match told a really good story.
I mean, I've seen him do topes off the top rope, you know, like, I mean, he's just, I mean, he's so graceful, and yet he's easily 350 pounds of just meat.
Exactly. You know? He's a big guy.
He's unbelievable. He's absolutely unbelievable. And he's young, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I can't wait to do him. I can't wait to see what he does in MLW. I'm so excited and happy for Kelvin.
Oh yeah.
He's been working for us off and on for a long time, and it's about time the world found out what Southern Indiana knows about Kelvin.
So your next match, you got two local guys, Bobby Beverly. We'll talk about later.
Can we go back just one? You missed Cole versus Freddie.
Oh, I did. I'm sorry. Cole versus Freddie. I'm sorry. That was right on top of there. Yeah. The first match there for Cole and Freddie. Again, two, and I want to talk about Cole and Freddie. Shit. Cole and Freddie. Cole Radrick and Freddie Hudson. The two prime examples of homegrown guys. Two guys who work their asses off. Cole is getting chances all across the country, and Freddie better be. Freddie actually beat him to become the new Paradigm Pro champion in a hell of a match. With the UWFI rules, I want to have Cole on pretty soon. I actually want to have Freddie on pretty soon too. But talk about these guys as your homegrown local talents.
Yeah, I really got to shout out both these guys, and that's why I wanted to come back to this one. Freddie has been with us since our very first show. He was in the semi-main event of our very first show, and it was actually one of his first matches. We did like this
interesting
storyline where him and Zach Bittman, another young wrestler, faced the rejects versus this like grizzled old vets versus these young upstarts. And Freddie has just always been there for us. And we've booked Freddie in some shit. Let me tell you, we have done some things with Freddie that in hindsight did not make sense. I mean, Freddie was in a tag team with me, for crying out loud. So I'm partial to blame on this too. But he's always stuck with it, and he's always just tried, and he's just gotten so, so good. And, you know, he's always been willing to help, get in that car, go get that opportunity. He's just hungry. And we've watched Freddie develop from, you know, a guy having one of his first matches to one of the best in the region, and it's just been phenomenal. Cole was a little bit further along in his career when he started with us. You know, still young, but he had – Freddie was, you know, matches old. Cole was a couple years in when he started working for us. And it's the same thing. You know, this guy's just hungry, willing to make those drives, willing to go out there and kind of reach for that brass ring, so to speak. And I want to pull back the curtain a little bit because this is a fun story. And if you know it and you watch back that replay – you can kind of tell, but you wouldn't otherwise. Freddie didn't know he was winning that match.
I saw the look on his face, and he was shocked, and I'm just like, what's going on here? Yeah, everybody in the building was shocked, but I think Freddie was the most shocked.
And the reason we did that was we wanted – Freddie had always been planning to win the match, dating back to March. But Cole was kind of the – let's surprise him with it. It's going to be such a better moment if he doesn't know, and he's not going to get in his head about it, right? Because, you know, he's winning our top title. If he's just out there to try and have a great match, he's going to have a great match. Let's let him find out when, you know. So Freddie, the finish they called was, you know, Cole was going to break out that triangle, but obviously, he did not, and it was phenomenal, and I think one of the best moments we've ever had in PPW.
And you kick off the show with the title changing hands. Everyone's yes. Like, what is going on here? We're in for a treat tonight.
Yeah, I have a philosophy on indie wrestling that within the first three matches, a person has decided if they enjoy the show or not.
I like that.
So we often front load our stuff. Because of that, with the general mindset that, you know, you start hot, you stay hot. Then if you've got something that you think might be a little bit weaker, you put that in the second half of the show, kind of buffer it, because people will still be, like, up from the beginning of it. But that's what we tried to do with this card.
Interesting. I like that, actually, a lot. Yeah. So Tom Lawler and Calvin Tankman, we just talked about. Bobby Beverly and Ron Mathis. Not as familiar with these. I've seen Bobby Beverly the couple times that come up to Paradigm. I have not seen Ron Mathis. Ron Mathis seems like an absolute maniac. And
yeah.
Bobby Beverly seems like a your shitty heel who does everything under the table to win. But Bobby Beverly seems like he's got a history with you guys, too. Talk about some of these guys here.
Sure. I'll start with Mathis. Mathis is... he does a little bit of everything, but he's well-known at Rockstar Pro Wrestling out of Dayton, Ohio. He's held their title 7 or 8 times, quite a bit. He's also done a lot of death matches out on the East Coast, primarily with H2O, Matt Tremont's organization on East Coast. So he's a violent maniac. And, you know, we had him out there with Bruce Gray, who's his tag team partner as well. Bobby Beverly is, in my opinion, and I know Twitter disagrees with me, but whatever, the most underrated wrestler in the United States. Bobby Beverly was trained by Johnny Gargano. You know, he's been wrestling for 14 years now.
Really?
He's out of Cleveland as well. And we kind of play into that with the character a little bit, that, you know, everybody from his wrestling class almost has gone on to some level of fame. You know, Gargano's on NXT. Matt Cross is everywhere as well. You start seeing Matt Justice even gets international tours, and they came up together. So that's kind of where his character kind of plays into that. The I've been continually overlooked, and now is going to be my time, right? And I'm going to make it my time regardless. So it's actually, we can go into it more as we get to the end of the show. That was actually the payoff of about a year and a half long storyline.
Gotcha. He's very good with the character work. He's very good at, he is an undisputed heel. I will certainly give him that. I think his heelness might get in the way of his work, actually, because he doesn't, at least in the couple times that I've been there to see him wrestle, he hasn't showed what he can do because he's healing it up so much.
Well, here's how you tell if a wrestler is good or not from a promoter standpoint. Mm-hmm. How's the other guy look?
That's right? True. That's true.
It's easy to go in there and look good, be flashy, and have the other guy look like total shit. You'll never see somebody go in the ring with Bobby Beverly and look bad.
That makes sense.
So that's just kind of like my kind of 2 cents on like judging work rate for whatever that's worth.
No, that makes sense. Makes complete sense. Two guys I was very excited about. Mo Hoodfoot Atlas, who has...
Oh, yeah, man, this match.
Hoodfoot and Devontae's, man. And very few people who are listening to the show have heard of either one of them, and you need to look both of them up. Because Hoodfoot, man, that dude has, like... He spent all of COVID just getting leaps and bounds better. That dude has put it together.
Hoodfoot is really, he's got the character work down. He's got the work rate down. I think he was our breakout star of the show.
Yep.
Twitter loved him.
Wholly agree.
I love Hoodfoot. Devontae's was a late replacement for us.
He's a Chikara guy, right?
Yeah, he's out of Chikara. I'll be honest with you, that was totally Cam. I did not know who he was, but we had a spot to fill, and I'm in a bad mood. Like, this is one evening, and Cam's sending me, like, some highlight videos of guys, and I'm like, whatever, I'll look at it tomorrow, because I'm annoyed about something, I think, not wrestling-related, but Cam and Doug are trying real hard to talk about wrestling in our little Facebook group chat. So I finally just open his highlight video of Devontae's, and I'm like, oh, my God, this guy's great. Yeah, we need to bring him in immediately. Why don't you go ahead and talk to him? So that's how Devontae's ended up at the show. And
he's got an Ahmed Johnson type body.
Yeah.
He's just built like a brick shit house, and he can work.
He's possibly even more well-developed than Ahmed Johnson.
Which is crazy
as that sounds.
Which is crazy.
That was phenomenal. That knockout Hoodfoot got at the end. I think we're going to be talking about that for a long time to come. We've got some good things planned coming for Hoodfoot. Eric Stevens has asked for a match with him. We're going to try and do that. We're going to try and bring him in a name for our anniversary show as well. Very excited about both those guys. Devontae will be back as well.
Going up to probably my favorite match of the night, Nolan Edward and Kevin Koo.
Nolan, I love Nolan.
I love Nolan too, man. Nolan's going to probably be on in the next couple weeks on this show. Nolan's my rookie of the year.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Nolan has gotten, because I've seen Nolan a bunch. Obviously, he's, you know, fully biased. He's a friend. He's obviously always around Tennessee and Georgia because he really doesn't care about making 20-hour drives to hang out and even just to hang out. He just comes to shows and hangs out. He's not even booked on to just, and you know, to just make a 20-hour drive, which is insane. But he cares that much. And then when he's on a show, he really kills it.
The first time I ever met Nolan was our 30th show. This would have been like November 30th, I want to say, of last year. Mouse had met Nolan at another show and told him to come down to one of our shows. Shout out to Mouse, by the way. Mouse was involved in PPW as well, in the names I forgot to mention earlier. He gave his shares of the company over to his son, Logan. They're both great people.
The conscience of independent wrestling.
Sure. But anyway, so he tells Nolan to come on down to one of our shows. So Nolan just shows up, you know, before bell time to help out. Drove down from Canada to come to our show for no pay, just not even a guaranteed spot, you know, just to try and get on the card. And we put him in a pre-show match actually with Hoodfoot and another guy named Pat the Bruiser. And I'll be damned if their pre-show three-way was not one of the best matches on the whole card. Got busted open a hard way in a building in which we're not allowed to bleed. So I had to go down to the locker room and throw a first aid kit at him. But just, he earned a spot, you know, on all our cards with that match.
Well, was that the show with AJ and Effie?
No, this was prior to that. This was still at the arena.
Okay. Gotcha. Cause he was at the other show I was at, but yeah. He's gotten so good and he already was good. And then him and Koo had the hurtiest match I've seen in a really long time.
Yeah. They started hot. They kept going hot. He'd been telling me for, you know, weeks as we were debating, you know, how to match him up. Like, what's the best match for him? Because I want to say heavy hitters in March, he was going to work Dom. And then we lost Dom temporarily. And he kept telling me, hey, I want Kevin Koo. So I booked him Kevin Koo. It was really good. I'm glad I booked him Kevin Koo. I'm glad I listened to Kid.
And I came to a realization, and I've had it for a while, but it came clear to me Friday night. Kevin Koo, of anyone independent wrestling, his offense looks, again, I'm going to use the word hurdy, the most hurdy, of the most impactful, the most like, ouch, this really fucking hurts, of maybe anyone in independent wrestling.
Yeah. All his stuff does look very hurdy. I like that word. We'll go with that. It looks very hurdy.
Everything he does looks like it has genuine impact and really puts pain. And he brings pain.
Sure.
So I enjoyed the shit out of that match.
I did too. They did. He brought that door from Canada. Not from Canada, from Flint. He's living over in Flint now, but yeah. I always just want to say from Canada because he's always going to be my Canadian.
Yeah.
But I love polite. Nolan. He's very polite. He's very nice. You're going to be seeing a lot more of Nolan.
Great.
In the future on Paradigm shows.
Next match, Dom Guarini and Gary J. This was, man, your first half of this show was just banger after banger. Dom and Gary had you again, talk about the all-star team. You have, you know, two of the top 15 wrestlers in independent wrestling, you know, just in the, sixth match of a show, you know, I mean, an embarrassment of riches here.
Sure. Yeah, and this was great, too.
It was great.
That knockout kick to Gary J, that Dom hit him with was something else. And Dom is just, I put that match there because I wanted to try and have like a spotlight match of two guys who I thought would really live up to the shoot style and hit each other pretty hard. And everybody on Friday hit each other pretty hard, but those guys really, really hit each other pretty hard.
Yeah, that backstage must have looked like a MASH unit.
We had Matt ended up having to get fixed up by Doug's girlfriend, who is a nurse. So I think Matt's was the worst of it. But
oh, the cut on his face?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Nobody was feeling great after how impactful those matches were.
Next match was Aaron Williams and AJ Gray. I love both of these dudes, but AJ is, man, that dude has a soft spot in my heart.
Sure. Sure. You know, AJ's been with us for a long time. AJ was our second champion and is still our longest reigning champion. He had the title for something like 380 days. Made 13 defenses of that title. I just made an infographic for that. That's why I know that off the top of my head.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, he's real good. It was really good. Very, very well done.
I'm not that big of a stats nerd, but I can quote those ones because I just looked it up on Cage Match. Now we love AJ. You know, we were really one of the first places to give AJ the ball and let him run with it.
And now he's a star.
Yeah, he really is. And I'm glad he's getting places, and I'm glad he's going places. And Aaron Williams is a consummate professional. You know, he's been doing this for a really long time as well. And he's very, very good. Aaron Williams is, you were saying, top 15 workers on the indie scene. I'd put him on that list.
Oh, yeah. And I think he was hampered a little bit by kind of, and I'm just... You know what, fucking, and you don't have to say anything. I think he was kind of hampered by his association with IWA for the longest time, where he just kind of became an IWA guy. But I think he's branching out now to more indies, and people are like, oh shit, who is this Aaron Williams guy? Just like, dude, he was there for years. He just happened to be stuck in one promotion for the longest time, but now he's like branching out, and everyone's like, Aaron Williams is good, shit, fucking who knew?
Yeah, he's very, very good, and... I'll give Ian some credit there. He's given Aaron a lot of really good matches, and Aaron's had some amazing matches, you know, at TPIs and other IWA events.
Ison, one of my dearest friends, and Bradley Prescott, one of my dearest friends, in the match that you wanted it to be, Ison's a shit kicker, and BP4... I mean, BB4 got some offense in here. I mean, he put him through a goddamn door.
Sure.
But Ison soundly defeated him. There was a great moment in the match where there's a great gif of it floating around where Ison hits him in the face and BP4 walks around and goes, yeah, 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 and then just faints. It was just perfect Bradley Prescott.
No, my wife keeps talking about that one. Yeah, that was phenomenal. There's this running joke that so how our creative works is we kind of have a team process, but I kind of have taken over some of the tournaments and done that more myself. And there's the joke that whenever I'm in charge of a show fully, like booking wise, that I'm trying to kill Bradley. And so I had to continue that. That's what led to the Brett Ison one. But our first heavy hitter show. Possibly the wildest match we've ever had was a first round match between Bradley and Matt Justice that almost actually got us banned from the Jeffersonville Arena. It was so wild.
And that's an accomplishment if you're banned from that arena, by the way.
Yes, yes, exactly.
The amount of shit that's happened in that building.
Then I also had him against Matt again in a Stairway to Hell match. Oh my God. So... I don't know if you've played Bradley's video game, but it's very, very difficult.
Is it?
His mobile app. I am terrible at it. I can't get past one. So I told him for the foreseeable future, we're giving him street fights and ladder matches until he gets that game redeveloped so I can, like, not be beat on it.
Bradley's a treat. He's been on this show before. He is... maybe the most interesting man in independent wrestling. You know the story with the puppetry, right?
Maybe not.
Nationally ranked puppeteer.
Yeah, yes, I did know that, actually, if you bring that up.
And he was a nationally ranked cheerleading competitor, too.
Bradley has all sorts of weird little fun facts about him. And but the thing with Bradley is I have to avoid him on show days because he's always trying to pitch me ideas. Well, some of them are very good ideas. Most of them are pretty outrageous. And I'm like,
his half-baked ideas, man. They're fantastic.
But I have lots of Bradley tidbits stored in my brain from these. And Eisen, we got to talk about Eisen too. Man, I'm glad Eisen's starting to blow up. Eisen is a great guy.
He deserves it. He is, the again, talk about some of the hardest working men in independent wrestling. He's just, he's put in the work. He has a presence. He knows exactly what he's good at and is very good at that. And, you know, he's not going to be your guy doing 450s off the top rope, but if you want someone who's going to be, go in there and be a believable shit kicker who will scare women and children out of their seats, Brett Eisen's your guy.
No, I agree completely. We brought in Brett Eisen. We started using him at our Heavy Hitters 1 tournament, actually. And he had about a 30-minute match, because we're the kind of people that book 30-minute matches in the first round of a tournament on occasion, against Michael Elgin on that show, and it was phenomenal. And, you know, it's just kind of expanded from there. Eisen's had some really good matches for us. He had one against Bobby Beverly August of last summer that I really liked, where they had the sequence, probably 3-4 minutes of them just trading Sayudo suplexes over and over again, and it was phenomenal. Like, because, you know, that's a really hard bump to take. And they're just doing it over and over again, like shrugging it off like it's nothing. So I love Eisen. He's a tremendous presence. Very humble guy as well. Very, very great dealing with him. You know, I was really glad we brought him in. And him and Bradley both are regulars with us now.
Next match is Eric Stevens, who's been on this show. We've talked about him a bunch. And Big Purse. He was a replacement for Reed Bentley, but I think he did a good accounting of himself.
I think so, too. So other people who follow indie wrestling might know him as Percy Davis.
Yeah, that's who I know.
He's been around the Indiana area for quite some time, and he's a great dude. Super nice.
Very good commentator. Much
bigger. I'm sorry?
Very good commentator.
Yeah, he's very funny. He's got a great personality, very charismatic. And the thing with it, he's deceptively bigger than you would expect as well, right? Because you think when you see him in the ring, sometimes he doesn't always get his size across. And I think with this big perk, like going to that character, I think that's going to help get his size. And, you know, he does have a boxing background.
His arms are huge.
Exactly. I thought, you know, for that match being put together on literally 2 hours' notice, I want to give a shout-out to Bentley. I'm glad he's okay. He had a situation where it was better for him to avoid the show until he got his test results back.
Sure.
So
and we're going to be seeing a lot there. Of that probably over the next God knows how long, to be honest. And, you know, wrestlers can take a booking and be stupid, or they can be cautious, and I'd much rather them be cautious.
100%. And I'm glad he did that. I still want to see Reed Bentley versus Eric Stevens. We'll still make that happen at some point. But I think Percy, you know, probably earned himself a spot with us as well.
Next match is Flash Thompson, who I was not familiar with, and Justin Kyle, who I've seen a little bit of and looks like just a giant slab of man. He looks like early Tyson Tomko.
Sure.
And except he's a much better worker. He's a much better worker than Tomko. He has that Tomko look. But just like physically imposing, you know, giant human being, bald tattoos, but a much better worker than Tomko. And then Flash Thompson, who just played up the heel character completely.
So Flash Thompson, for people that follow kind of the Ohio indies, they might know him as Kyle Maverick.
Okay.
He's been around for a long time, mainly under the Kyle Maverick name. Again, a lot at Rockstar Pro, but also at Emerge Wrestling up in Columbus, Indiana. And both these guys have legitimate shooter backgrounds. Flash, you wouldn't guess it from his character, because his character is this like loud, obnoxious, almost Kenny Powers-esque character. used to fight in King of the Cage. Dude can fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think because... you know, be honest, we got some backlash from that match. But I think when you understand that both these guys are MMA fighters coming in, that match was actually very good. If you look at it from a perspective of the story they told with MMA, I really enjoyed that match. And to recap kind of what happened, because Justin Kyle is much, much bigger than Flash Thompson, right? What would you say, 6 inches, probably 80 pounds?
Literally twice his size.
Yeah. So Justin Kyle comes in and throws around Flash and is dominating it, and Flash catches him in a knee bar, and, you know, Justin has to tap. That's what happens in fights sometimes.
Yeah. UFC 1, baby.
Exactly. I really, really enjoyed that. We're going to run back that match probably at our anniversary show. They both want to do it again, and I want to see that one again.
Again, we're talking all-stars. We have Chris Dickinson, who is, you know, was in my top 10 last year, and Lee Moriarty, who will be in my top 5 this year. Dear Lord, talk about embarrassment of riches. And they had one hell of a match.
Yeah, they really did. So Lee, when I booked him for the Grand Prix, Lee was like, dude, I could do that style. And I'm like, I'd never seen Lee kind of work the shoot wrestling style. And I was like, all right, you're good enough at everything else. I believe you. If you say you can do it, I believe that you can do it. And then he goes out there and he had personally what I thought was probably match of the night at the Fighting Spirit Heavyweight Grand Prix, or at least one of them.
With Tankman?
And then Kelvin Tankman.
Yeah, that was that match still sticks in my memory. That was so good. It was ridiculous.
So it was obvious I had to bring him back. And Chris, we've worked with a few times in the past. Chris is a good dude. I was excited to see kind of, you know, and I knew kind of Chris Dickinson could be the measuring stick for Lee Moriarty, because Chris Dickinson is very, very familiar with Japanese style wrestling. He understands the spirit of this. You know, he's been in the ring with Josh Barnett before as part of those Bloodsport cards. He gets it. And I wanted to test to see, like, I think Lee's really good. You know, from my viewing of him, I think Lee's one of the best I've seen, you know, in the current scene. I would be with you top 5, top 10, certainly. But I knew if I put him against Chris, I'd find out for sure.
Yeah.
But they confirmed my suspicions. I'll say that. That was probably my match of the night.
Yeah, Lee is, everything he does is so ridiculously smooth and looks natural. And stuff that shouldn't be natural, it looks natural to him. But I like that you threw him in the ring with Dickinson, because he's only a few years into the business and he needs to be tested against guys who are better than him.
Sure.
You know, and he needs to be put in the, he needs to be challenged. And you and Brett Lauderdale and beyond, they're putting him against guys who are experienced and challenging, and they're not letting him rest on his laurels, and neither are you.
No, absolutely. I think the sky's the limit for Lee.
Oh, yeah. He'll be making significant money sooner rather than later, I think.
I hope we can use him for another couple of years, but yeah. I don't know that we'll have that much time with him, to be honest with you. I agree with you.
And then the last tournament match until the finals, we talked a little bit about it, but Matthew Justice and Stefan Bonner brained each other for 15 minutes.
Yeah, man, this was just an absolute car crash.
It really was.
No other way to describe it. It exceeded my wildest expectations.
Oh, my God.
And the first time they wrestled, it exceeded my wildest expectations. So, like, they're continuing that trend. Matt is very, very talented, very, very good. Bonner told me initially when I booked him that he wanted somebody who could, that he was working on it, but he wanted somebody who could take a hit, just in case.
Matt Justice can take a hit. There is no question about that.
And he proved that on Friday. You know, he got hit with that forearm, and that opened him up a pretty nasty gash under his eye. That was something else, man. That match, I don't even know what to say about it other than you should probably go watch it. But the first one was good as well.
Oh, they were great. They were both great. I was there for both of them, and they were both fantastic. This one was probably a little more violent, if violence is your thing. It was a little bit more of a spectacle. It was a little crazier, though the first one was also fantastic. But I think you're seeing the evolution of Matt Justice to an extent, but also Stefan Bonner in his work in Friday night's match.
No, I agree completely. That powerbomb he got Matt on through the door, that was great. And he managed to do it because they're big guys. When they started setting up for a powerbomb, I was like, ah, shit. Because, you know, we got a pretty low ceiling in the Legion. And I'm like, this ain't going to work. But they made it work. So I was very impressed with that.
So then you have a quandary. You have 11 guys.
Mm-hmm.
and you have a match. You decide to put all 11 guys into one match. What's your decision-making process going into that? How do you... Because I was talking with Mose about this, and I said, that has to be a booking nightmare. Like, an 11-man match, you have the all-star team, you have all these guys who won matches. That has to be the worst match ever to possibly book. And yet you made it work.
It was, you know... Some liked it, some hated it. I liked it.
Okay. No, I enjoyed it. It was way better than my possible dreams and expectations because I didn't know how you were going to possibly book your way out of it, and yet you booked your way out of it.
So so when we did Heavy Hitters 1, it was a 16-man tournament. We did two Fatal 4-Way semifinals and then a one-on-one finals.
Yeah.
Right? But when we got a 22-man, you can't really – the math doesn't work for like a traditional tournament structure, and we're already going to be at 14 matches at this point. So it became a, well, how do we end this? And I don't know if you've ever seen Aztec Warfare in Lucha Underground. That was kind of the primary inspiration.
Gotcha.
And we had talked about running an Aztec Warfare match before. So we were like, well, why don't we just do Aztec Warfare? You know, I don't want to do a battle royal and cheapen it with the over-the-top eliminations. But then I was like, you know, it's really hard to follow some of that stuff if you got too many people in the ring. So that's why we mandated the four in, one out, one in thing. So basically, four people would start the match. When somebody got eliminated, a new person would enter. So I don't know if you ever played Nintendo 64. The
BP4 was explaining it to me, and it made complete sense when he explained it to me how there's like you can only have four characters on the screen at one time on N64, and that's what you guys were doing.
Exactly. So that was very much a product of, like, my childhood coming up in terms of how we did that. It came out better than I expected. We were a little bit rushed for time because the show was going long.
It didn't feel long, though. Because I've been at 2.5-hour shows that felt like 4.5-hour shows, and I've been at 3.5-hour shows that felt like 7-hour shows. And that felt like two. I'm sorry. There've been 3.5-hour shows that felt like 2-hour shows, and your show felt tight.
That's good, and I'm really glad to hear you say that because that is, we work hard on times. And I'll be honest, we probably give people less time than you know other promotions might. But what we told them all going in was, hey, there's 14 matches on this. Go in. This is a sprint. Go in, hit your high spots, make an impact, then go the fuck home. You know, and for the most part, that's what everybody did. And I think the show worked as a result of that. And we didn't have, we're not a heavily story driven promotion. We do have storylines, but not a ton of them. But I think a lot of the times when people get bogged down in longer shows, it's because you've seen 47 run-ins, you've seen 13 interviews, and you don't really care about any of it.
Yep. Completely agree.
So we do storylines. We will have run-ins. We will have interviews and such occasionally. I think it's important not to overplay those because I've always felt that our shows that felt the longest, even if they weren't necessarily the longest, were things of that nature.
So let's talk about the final. You put Bobby Beverly over. Interesting decision. Talk about your decision-making process there.
So let me give you kind of the backstory of the storyline. Because this was one thing that this was one of our few storylines that blew off a 1.5-year long storyline, but that was probably missed because this was a much larger audience than the people that have seen our other shows. But essentially, Bobby and Matt came in 2018 and just started killing themselves for us. We put them against each other, and they literally almost killed each other. It was one of the as brutal as any matches I've ever seen. And, you know, they're legitimately friends, and they just beat the shit out of each other to the point where Matt suffered a pretty bad concussion, got knocked out during the match. Probably the scariest injury we've ever had at one of our shows.
Jesus.
All right. So that happens, and what's the natural follow-up to that is we make them a tag team after that. And they had tagged elsewhere in Ohio and done some of that, but we're like, you know, these guys are crazy. Let's see what this craziness can lead us. So at this time, you know, we're kind of struggling as a promotion to, I don't want to say make ends meet because we all have real jobs and such, which helps as well. But like, we're trying to run Paradigm like a business and try to make things break even, which is harder than it sounds sometimes in indie wrestling. And one of our big draws was hardcore wrestling. And we found that if we put the lifers in there with the rejects, it was just magic. So we did that for several months and kind of built from that. And Matt got a lot of notoriety with our local crowd from that. The rejects are, which is John Wayne Murdoch and Reed Bentley,
yeah,
are superhuman celebrities, you know, in the Southern Indiana area because they've been around and done forever. But Bev never got as much of it, right? He never got as much of it. So we started to do the slow turn where we were going to have Matt start challenging for the title. Because this time, you know, AJ's our champion, but Matt's probably 1A in terms of most overness with our crowd of who the top face is going to be. So we start doing this tease that Justice is going to win the title. So we also start teasing that Bev wants the title as well. Right? So we start doing that. And then it turns out where Justice really does kind of blow up, and we can't get him on our shows as easily because he gets offered some bookings that, you know, conflict with our date, and we tell him to take them. You know, go get those opportunities. So we end up stripping the lifers of the tag titles. They never lose them in the ring. You know, they have a 200-plus day reign. They never lose them. But that's kind of like where Bev's whole thing, character, comes in, is that he's mad because he's been forgotten, you know, in all these different aspects of his training class, of this tag team. He was the less popular of the two, and he just loses it. So he comes in January, steals our title belt, attacks me, attacks several of our roster members, Billy Stark, Mouse's daughter, and attacks everybody. And it just says that, you know, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to get to the top. And so I think that was the storyline playing out was, you know, at the end, he's stomping the head of the guy who is his best friend because he's done being forgotten.
Interesting.
So that's where I was going with. I think it probably makes more sense if you've seen more of our shows. I know it was not a popular decision online, and not everything is. You know, with booking, you're never going to book a show that everybody likes every decision made.
No, you made a, I'll tell you made a star because you have your homegrown guy go over Matt Justice, Chris Dickinson, Eric Stevens, Brett Eisen, Dom Guarini, Tom Lawler. I mean, that's how you make a star.
Right. And I think Bev can back it up in the, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. I'm looking forward to doing another one-on-one match with him and Matt, because I think that's probably the logical place where we go with the anniversary show now is let them have a street fight. But I also want to see what Bev can do against other people. You know, I think Bev and AJ Gray at our Fighting Spirit Grand Prix was one of our best UWFI rules matches as well.
Oh, that was a really good match. I was there for that, yeah.
I think he can do a lot of different styles, and there's a recency bias on like Twitter, or like kind of a I know this person bias, right? Where if you've only seen a person one or two times and you haven't seen them in these other promotions, you tend to not think about as much about them, right? Because why are you watching Chris Dickinson at our show? It's not because of things you've seen Chris Dickinson do at our show. It's because of what you've seen him do everywhere else.
Yeah.
Bev does not necessarily have that notoriety recent. You know, he was he's been around forever, a lot of regional promotions up in Ohio, and he's been with AIW, but of the more prominent of the indies, not to call ourselves prominent, but of the IWTV family, it's us and AIW where he works. And he's primarily been a tag team wrestler at both places. So I'm really excited to see how he evolves and if he can, you know, take it to the next level, because I think he's got it. You know, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, but I've been right before as well, and I think he's got it.
I mean, you're taking a risk, but, I mean, it's a hell of a way to kick off a title reign.
Exactly. I mean, you know, because the safe play would have been probably Matt, but we had the positive, impactful face title win at the beginning, and I think there's something to be said. I'm not generally a heels-up guy. Doug and I have a lot of arguments about this. I'm of the WWF mentality. The face wins at the end. You send the fans home happy.
Yeah.
But on occasion, I think you got to do the opposite.
I mean, it was a risk. I mean, the more I think about it, the more I like it. And especially with you explaining it to me. But people in the crowd were kind of like, what's going on? But the people in the crowd who probably had been lifers for the promotion probably got it.
Yeah, and that was something too, was And that was a mistake on my part, assuming the crowd would understand better than they did. But if I tease it in a video package, you know what's going to happen, sure. Right? And then the issue, though, is that it was a different crowd than we normally got.
Yeah, you had some asshole from Chattanooga drive up. I know, really.
Well, we get that. You know, we love traveling fans. That's kind of our bread and butter because we couldn't do – as you've mentioned, there's so much saturation here that, you know, if we can get 20, 30 traveling fans in for a show, and, you know, we got – more than that for this show.
Oh yeah, I have my friends from Huntsville, Alabama with me.
Exactly. When we can get that, we can book a lot more because, you know, traveling fans. And this is going to sound like I'm going to greedy, but I don't mean it to. But it's just the simple reality of wrestling. To a traveling fan, if you're coming up here from Chattanooga, there's not a big difference between a $25 ticket and a $20 ticket.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
For the local fans that maybe go to 3, 5, 6 shows a month. There's a big difference in that $5. But what that $5 means to us is the level of talent we can do, the level of production we can do, what we can bring in, because we want to be a place that puts on top-level shows. So we love traveling fans is my way of getting around to that because they're kind of the lifeblood of our company.
Sure. Yeah, no, to me, I mean, if I'm going to go big, I'm going to go big.
Exactly.
You know, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go sit in the front row. The only way I sat in the third row the other night because there was only 3 tickets left. By the time I got it because I didn't know I could get out of work, but like, which is a testament to how well you guys did. I mean, you guys sold the building out.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be an asterisk on that when we look in the record books because of the capacity limit. But I do think, you know, in a world where there's no COVID, I think we could have had 200 people in there pretty easily, 250, which would be one of the bigger crowds in the history of our promotion.
A sellout is a sellout, brother.
Hey, yeah, I should just lean into it, right? I am proud of that. I am proud of it. Financially, it was our biggest gate ever, so that part was great. And you know, that's a testament, too, that we got that many people to come out in the middle of all this craziness because – you know, when I rescheduled this show, I didn't think this pandemic was still going to be happening. You know.
So from here, what's the prescription from here? You guys are running your 3rd anniversary show coming up.
Yeah, the plan is everything is tentative right now. With 2020, I think that probably goes without saying, but yeah. Everything is kind of tentative right now. But our most firm plan is that we want to run the 4th Friday in September. Unsanctioned Pro, our friends at Unsanctioned Pro out of Columbus, are going to be running in Indiana the next day. So we wanted to try and create like a synergy for traveling fans that want to try and make a weekend of it, see us on Friday, see them on Saturday.
That's cool.
So we're going to try and do that in September. It's going to be – it's technically speaking, and this is where you can tell we're really just carny-ass promoters. We're 2 weeks early on our 3rd anniversary. Our 3rd anniversary should fall in October. But I figured if we fudge – but it's literally 13 days.
Who's counting?
We can still probably get away with calling it our 3rd anniversary. So that's the plan for then. You know, if life cooperates, we'd love to go back to running monthly. In 2019, we ran 17 shows. Our ideal rhythm is between 12 and 16. But to be real honest, a lot's up in the air. But I can tell you one thing we are targeting is the Grand Prix 2 is February.
Oh, cool.
February of 2021. And I have confirmed and talked to and gotten the verbal buy-in from both Tom Lawler and Stefan Bonner.
Oh, nice.
That's probably going to be main evented by a super fight between those two.
Fantastic.
Also working on some big things for that card.
Can I buy a ticket now?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So we're still working on, you know, some finer details of the month-to-month, but the anniversary show is going to be a really big card for us. The next Grand Prix is going to be another big show. As for what the month-to-month has entailed, I don't know.
Well, if people want to get in touch with Paradigm or see some of the shows or how do people become more engaged with Paradigm?
Sure. So we're active on Twitter. It's often me, Jordan, or Cam on the Twitter. If you ever see somebody tweeting about Taco Bell from Paradigm Pro Wrestling, it's probably me not realizing I'm not logged into my personal account. where it's at Paradigm Pro Wrest, WRES, on Twitter, at Paradigm Pro Wrestling on Instagram. Our website is ParadigmProWrestling.com. We're also on Facebook, and we've just launched a store on WhatAManeuver.net. We've got a new UWFI-inspired t-shirt up there. We've also got our kind of classic Indiana Pacers tribute shirt there. If you guys want to pick up one of those, that'll help us continue to book, you know, this outrageous stuff, because that's, at the end of the day, that's what we want to do. You know, we want to build something that's just fun and unexpected and unique. Like, who's going to mix hardcore and shoot style other than us?
It was definitely, it was what drew me.
I saw one tweet that it was like, what if UWFI and FMW had booked a battle bowl together? And I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to need to frame that tweet.
Fantastic. Well, Gary, thank you so much for being on the show. It is much appreciated. You're running a hell of a promotion up there, and we're all rooting for you, man.
No, I appreciate that, and thank you for having me on here. You know, I'm sorry I'm so talkative and probably kind of dry, but I'll talk for hours if you'll let me.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Thank you very much, our loyal listeners, for it's you that's put the Place to Be Nation network on feed for 1 million downloads milestone. Continued thanks for your support. Let's keep it up. Jenny and the band together for a new episode of Jenny and the Gems with Superstars on the Superstation from February 1986. On Body Press Your Luck number 9, Champ Ryan Everett battles John Kaselkia and Calvin Kroll. The newest ride down the highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and Jacob are with Matt Souza and Ben Locke to break down episode 3 of Impact and the second anniversary show, pay-per-view number 100. On the debut episode of NWA Crock and Roll, Sean Kidd, Dr. G, and Callum McDougal are joined by Jacob Williams to look at Saturday Night NWA shows from April 1985. The NWA Saturday special has Scott and Dr. G joined by Sean Kidd to discuss the beloved TV championship. Check out the Place Nation Pop feed for some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, The Great Debate, Glenn Butler Podcast Hour, Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. Subscribe to Paratremendous podcast feeds Jennifer Smith's Jenny Position, Home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Brother Sister Rewatch, and The Journey Through Infinity and more. And the North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George, Home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, Three-Way Extreme Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, Roots of the Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, and more. We kicked off our 2020 stretch project determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have till New Year's Eve to do your research, promote matches, and build your lists. Conversation rules can be found on Facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the greatest song from a movie tournament is kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favorite each day. Go to Place to Be Nation each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bringing you fresh articles and topics on the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspectives, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, Matt's Disney Live Action Journey, and Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping at Amazon, be sure to click on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use placetobenation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and it helps us out with no cost to you.